I'm Levy Dalton, and this is All Drink to That, a twice weekly look behind the scenes of the wine business. Hey, gang. So you know our show here is sponsored by the wonderful 750, which is a search and find pricing database for wholesale buyers in New York and New Jersey, which we love very much. But we found a few other people who love it, too, one of whom is the fabulous Kristen Murphy of the Wine Library, who's here today.
Hey, guys. So I buy for a lot of different random wines, and I love to use 750 because there's a lot of great smaller wholesalers on there that you can take a look at. And as Garth Algar would say from Wayne's World, live in the now. Use 750 because it's great. And it's wonderful for those liquor buyers and wine buyers out there.
Kristen Murphy of the Wine Library, a user of the 750 service. Thank you. Isabella Odero on the show today of the Poderi Odero Winery in Barolo. Hello, how are you?
Hi, ciao, Levi. I'm very well. Thank you.
Nice to see you. Yeah. So why don't you sketch for me the history of Poderi Odero as it came along to be as it is today?
Yeah, our winery is one of the oldest and most ancient cellar family-owned cellars in the Lange Hills. We come from La Mora village, and it's difficult to find an exact date when the business was established, but we have many old documents at the winery, like old invoices, notarial deeds, parish acts, that take us back to 1700s.
Wow.
Yeah. So
you have past due invoices from the 1700s?
Yeah, more or less, yeah.
You've owed us money for 300 years.
Yeah.
It is tough to get some clients to pay.
Yeah, it takes many, many years sometimes. So we have accurate documentation that take us back to end of 1700, and the first ancestor we know is Giovanni Battista Odero, who was born at the end of 1700, and he dedicated all his life to the cultivation of the vineyards and to the production of Nebbiolo wines. And he was really a avant-garde vine grower, because just some years before the unity of Italy, which happened in 1861, he was concerned with the retrieval of sulfur from Sicilian volcanoes in order to fight a serious illness, which is oidium, which is a fungous disease that seriously attacked the vines in that period and jeopardize the production. So there is a story that we have in his diary, together with the priest of La Mora and together with other vine growers of the area. He tried to buy sulfur from Sicily and to obtain a good price, and he asked them to help him to bring sulfur from Sicily to Piemonte. So it's very interesting to read his notes, because he was very careful and he used to write in his diary all the operations he did every day, number of workers. It's very, very interesting. And by the way, my mother and my aunt, they are now writing a little book.
I didn't know that.
A little diary of memories of the Odero family.
Just to take it kind of step by step there, sulfur is naturally occurring in volcanoes, and he was using it to treat vines for oidium, which is powdery mildew, right?
Yes, it's oidium is a fungous disease, which still today is a problem in the Lange Hills, especially with many rains we have in the spring season, like April, May. Unfortunately, in the Lange Hills, we have humidity, so fungus attacks happen, and you have to treat them in the proper way, and especially in a prompt way. You have to be to intervene in the vineyards at the prompt moment. And sulfur is it's a good way to cure it.
Still, even today, people use it in the vines for that.
Yeah, by the way, we are now practicing organic cultivation in our Nebbiolo vineyards, and we are using sulfur. Yeah.
So what happened next? I mean, Giovanni Battista in the 1700s, what kind of wine would he have been making in terms of what would it have tasted like?
I wish I could taste his wines, but unfortunately we do not have any, because at the time he didn't bottle the wine, so the wine was produced and sold in bulk in larger containers. At the time, the family owned only vineyards located in La Morra, and it was mainly the typical varieties, so Nebbiolo, Dolcetto, I think Fresa. Yeah. Then in 1878, the company, the seller, started to have a similar phase like it is today. It was a very crucial year, because they started to bottle wine. So this is the very first year the Oddero wine was sold in a bottle and labeled as Oddero.
And would it have been, when Giovanni Battista was making it, would it have been dry?
Probably the first Nebbiolo was also a sparkling wines. So before Barolo is produced, as we know today, it was a little sparkling wine with good structure, rich tannins, of course, and probably not meant to age as much as today.
So almost in a way like what we might think of as like an artisanal Lambrusco today, like had a Vivace character.
Yes,
red grape that
exactly
was somewhat Vivace. Fresh.
Yes, yes. Then after the second half of 1800s, everything changed. So they really started to focus more on quality, and even the bottling process really helped a lot to maintain the quality of the wine and to help the structure and the longevity. And so Barolo finally came as we know today.
Because if you're drawing from like a large container, the wine starts to get oxidized. But if it's bottled, you can keep it for longer.
Yes, yes. And many, many small details of quality that were introduced in that period.
So who would have been in charge of the estate at that time, and what would it have looked like in the 1870s period? I mean, did you have vineyards outside of La Morra at that time, or?
Mainly it was Santa Maria, where the winery is located, La Morra village, and probably Castiglione Falletto. And the owner at the time was the grandfather of my grandfather, and his name is Giacomo, because everybody is named Giacomo in my family.
Because your grandfather's named Giacomo.
Yes,
too,
exactly, right? And also my brother is named Giacomo.
So. Oh, okay, I've never met your brother.
Yeah, many, many Giacomo in the Oddero family. And he was probably the only one in charge of the family, but with workers, because, of course, in the vineyards you're required to have some workers. But so nowadays we are owners of 35 hectares of vineyards, which in the Lange Hills, you know, this is considered to be a medium-sized property. At the time, of course, it was a much smaller property.
Because at that time there was very large estates.
Yes, yes. And we are one of the first. We are one of the most historical in the area. We started to produce wine with our own label, with very few other producers. Another important year for my family is 1911, when Giacomo Oddero, the grandfather of my grandfather, he officially presented his Barolo at the international exhibition in Torino.
Oh, okay.
Salone Internazionale in Torino. And from there, he started to sell the wines to local area like Lombardia, Milano, Genova, but also Switzerland and England. We found some, you know, invoices or and documents of wine being shipped to England.
So, I mean, at that time, I've seen pictures where the Oddero Cantina was being used also as a school facility for local children.
Oh, yes, in Santa Maria, exactly. It was the house, which is now owned by my cousin, and there used to be the elementary school for the young kids of Santa Maria. Yes.
And I guess we should explain what Santa Maria is.
Santa Maria is a little neighborhood which is in the main village of La Mora, and it's just in the mid part of the hill. And so our winery, our family winery, is located there, and we own some vineyards around the house. But the major part of our vineyards are extremely fragmented, so located in different villages of the Barolo area, not only there. But this is where everything started for us.
And what are some of the vineyards that you work with today?
Okay, we are proud to own some of the most important, some of the most historical crews in the Barolo DOCG area. And the names are Vigna Rionda in Serra Lunga d'Alba, Bussia in Monforte d'Alba, Brunate in La Morra. In Castiglione Falletto we own Villero and Rocche di Castiglione that today we battle and as a single vineyard. But we also own Bricco del Fiasco and Brunella Vineyard in Cassione Falletto that we put in the Barolo Classico. We use the grapes from these vineyards for the Barolo, the blended Barolo, the Barolo Classico.
Like a straight Barolo Normale. That's exactly. Not labeled with a vineyard grill.
Exactly, yes. We also own an important vineyard in the Barbaresco area, which is Gallina in Neve Village. And a small production because we own less than 2 hectares, and this is the only Barbaresco we produce. And also some vineyards in the Asti region, in Vincchio for the Barbera d'Asti, and in Trezzo Tinella for Moscato. So our property is, as I said, 35 hectares, but the distinctive characteristic is that it's extremely fragmented. So vineyards are really scattered in different areas and in so diversified. We firmly believe this is our strength, this is our complexity, because really we can offer different nuances, different expressions of our great Piemonte terroir. And I have to thank my grandfather Giacomo and his brother Luigi, because after the Second World War, so 1950s, they really wanted to buy vineyards which had different characteristics. So they bought Vigna Rionda and Bussia and vineyards in Castiglione Falletto and in the Asti region at that time. And really, they understood the potentials of the area. I think they were some of the first to really understand that the greatness of Nebbiolo is to represent the small differences in the soil. And so they really wanted to find vineyards with different soil characteristics and with different positions in the hills.
And when did they start breaking them out as single vineyard bottlings?
They started later. In the first single vineyard produced by my family in the Rocche di Castiglione in a 1982 vintage. So before, only one Barolo was produced with the best grapes from all our vineyards. So from Serra Lunga, from Monforte, from La Morra, only one Barolo, which is the Barolo Classico. And still today, my grandfather is still convinced that this is the best expression of Barolo. Barolo wine was not born as a single vineyard selection. So really the philosophy, the idea was to have the best grapes from the best areas with different characteristics, but complementary characteristics, blend them together in order to have a very well-balanced wine and the very best expression of the vintage. So all the producers, they only had one Barolo, which was really very significant to represent the style of the winery, of the house. And we started in the area after the Burgundy influence to focus on single vineyard selection, I think, in 1970s. One of the first was the Conterno. And then we started to have our Rocche di Castiglione in 1982, followed by Vigna Rionda and Bussia in 1985.
So if I were to open up something from the 60s, Odero, it would have Vigna Rionda in it?
Yes.
60s and 70s?
Yes, yes. The last vineyard my family purchased was Brunate in 1968. So before, all the others, they were already used to have the Barolo Classico. So.
And what do you think of the different characteristics of some of those different communes that are represented? Because you have a vineyard in, you know, several, actually a couple in Lamora. You have in Castiglione Folletto. You have in Serra Lunga. Yeah. You have in Monforte. So if someone were to trying to better understand at the commune level what some of the characteristics in terms of taste would be, what would you say to them?
Okay. In the Barolo area, we can find two different macro areas. So I'm talking about very general characteristics. And of course, every vintage has a personal characteristic, personal distinctive feature. But I think the two macro areas are La Morra, Barolo, a part of Castiglione Folletto and Novello and Verduno. They are part of the Tortonian area, which is a younger kind of soil. While a part of Castiglione Folletto, Serra Lunga and Monforte d'Alba are the elevation, are part of the elevation area of Barolo, which is the most ancient, oldest soil we have in the Lange. Then in this part, in the elevation area, the soil is richer of gray-white marls. Marl is a composition of calcareous deposits, white sands, and clay. In the elevation area, you really have a higher percentage of limestone, of clay. So this is really a very, very dry soil, extremely poor of organic matter. Rich of microelements like boron and potassium, and the plants there, they really suffer for a water shortage during the summer. It's really very, very dry. In the Tortonian area, you have a younger soil. Of course, it's not a young soil because I'm talking about 6 to 8 million of years ago. So the Lange soils is very ancient. It's a sedimentary marine soil.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So in the past, in the tertiary era, it used to be the sea there. And the soil is created from the sea. So it's a sedimentary soil with deposits. And still today, you can find some fossils in the soil. And it's made of different substrates,
different layers. And
so if you have small differences in the percentage of clay, sands, or calcareous deposits, you really have different results in the wines. And in the Tortonian areas, the Barolo, they are more known to be more elegant, with beautiful nuances and aromatics on the nose, and with important tannins, but just more delicate and softer and a little bit rounder. While Barolos from the elevation area, they are the most long-lasting and powerful, so big tannins, made for aging, really.
And what other changes have happened at the winery since the early 80s when you started doing single vineyard releases?
The most important changes? First of all, I think important thing is that in 1997, my aunt Cristina, she started to be involved in the production. And she's, by the way, the first woman of Odero family as a winemaker after many, many generations of men. She studied agronomic sciences at the University of Torino, and so what she wanted to is really to focus on the vineyards operation. We didn't change our winemaking style. We didn't add any new technology to our vinification processes, but really what we did and what she did, especially, is to improve the vineyard operations and just adding small details of care everywhere, more knowledge, more accurate and prompt operations. And I think she really added an improvement to the quality of our grapes, also lower yields. And nowadays, she's so passionate about organic cultivation. And we started in 2009 to practice organic cultivation. We wanted to start step by step, because in Piemonte is more difficult to be organic than in Sicily or in Tuscany. We have, as I said before, more rains, so it's more difficult to manage the operations in the vineyards. And also, we do not own a unique plot of land, but these vineyards are extremely diversified, so you really need to be able to act at the prompt time, at the same time maybe in different areas. So we need to hire more employees, more workers. They know what they have to do. And so we wanted to start gradually with organic cultivation. And we first started with Bricco Chiesa, which is the vineyard which is all around the house, the winery, with Brunate in La Morra, with Rocche in Castiglione Falletto, and with Gallina in Neve. And we obtained excellent results. And nowadays, almost all the 17 hectares we own planted with Nebbiolo grape are converted in organic cultivation. This is important because we believe it's not only a fashion thing. You know, nowadays everybody requests organic cultivation. The first thing the people they ask me is, are you organic? But for us, it's not a marketing thing. When we say something, we really want to do what we say. So We started gradually, but we are there and we are very happy with our results. We see differences in the grapes, and this is the most important thing, to have healthy grapes. When you have healthy grapes, there is no need to add anything to them.
And Maria Cristina Uran also brought in Luca Veggio.
Yes, yes.
And how did you find Luca, and what does he do?
So Luca... I can say he's like part of the family nowadays because he has been working with us since 2001 vintage. So it's many years he is with us, and he is a young guy from Valle Talloria, so in close to Grinzane Cavour. He used to go at Enologica School in Alba. And when he finished, he started to work at another winery for just 2 years, and then he joined us. My aunt, she, before being a winemaker for Odero, she was a teacher. She was a professor at an enological school and at another high school in Alba. So she knew many professors at enological school, and one of them told her, this is a very good guy, and you should know him, meet him, and talk with him. So finally they met, and in 2001 they started together, and he was a great help for Cristina because at first when she started she encountered some difficulties with my grandfather and with his brother Luigi, and so Luca really helped her in the everyday work, in the support, also in the moral support. And nowadays he's responsible for our wines, so we do not have a wine consultant, but our wines are made only by Cristina, by Luca, by our team. And I can say it's not so easy to find people. It is difficult to find good people with good expertise, but also people that they work for you as they were working for their family. And Luca really is. He works with us like he is part of the family. And so we are very lucky to have him. He's very passionate about wines. I think he has a good palate, and he's very loyal to the tradition. So we are, you know, growing together. And because when he started to work with us, he was very young. He was like 21, 22 years old. So
is labor sometimes a problem in Italy in terms of getting people to do what you want them to do
in
a timely fashion?
Yeah, it's difficult to find good people, I think, everywhere. But in Italy especially, it's difficult to find Italian people because we always need help, especially in the vineyards. But the people, the new generation, which is coming to help us in the vineyard operation, is not Italian. So we have a good team of workers. They come from eastern part of Europe, especially from Bulgaria.
Because,
because they have knowledge. They grow vines in Bulgaria, and so it's part of their tradition. And many people, they come to the Lange to for the harvest, and some they stay all year long because we like each other. And so it's like a big family, because we have some apartments in Santa Maria, and some of them, they can stay there with us all year long.
Oh.
Yeah. So we have all year long, we hire about 15 people for our vineyards operation. And then in certain moments, like springtime, June, July, and then during the harvest season, we have to hire more people to help us, because
So you need like about one person per 2 hectares kind of thing.
Yeah, we estimated we need about 300 hours of work per hectare per year. This is a lot. For us, the cost of employees, of workers, is the most expensive. It's very, very important. Also because in many vineyards, because they are so steep, it's not possible to go with tractors, so all the works, they are done by hand. They are manual works. I'm talking about like the Barbera in Vincchio d'Asti. The vineyard we own is beautiful, but it costs us so much because it's, first of all, it's far away. So we need 40 minutes to go there with the tractor. And then it's so steep, and the rows, they are so narrow, it's not possible to go with the machine, with the tractor. So every operation, every single operation is done by hand. And also in Rocca, in Castiglione, everything is done by hand. And especially now with the organic cultivation, we do not use chemical treatments to remove the weed, so everything is mechanical, is done by hand with you know, to cut the grass. So many more hours of work.
But when I look in those vineyards, it seems like there has been a lot of work done in Mondoca and in Busia. You've raised the trellising.
Yeah.
In Roque, as in Mondoca, you've added hail netting, and
yes,
in Bernate, you changed the posts in terms of their wooden posts now.
Yes.
So that seems like that would have been quite a bit of work the team.
Exactly. Many investment in the vineyards. And this means, as you say, just little details. But these small details, they become huge differences in 10 years' time in the grapes, in the results you have with the wines. So nowadays, only especially now, we can really see the differences that Cristina introduced back at the end of the 1990s. Because the new vintages of Barolo that we have, I'm talking about 2009, 2010, and 2011, so still in the barrel, they really are the wines she wanted to have. But in the agricultural work, when you want to see a result, you don't have to rush. You have to be patient. You have to see the results in 10, 15 years' time.
And it does seem like there have been some changes in the winery as well, in terms of doing some experimentation. Seems like there's Austrian cooperage now, and then also in terms of making the wine, you were experimenting with holding the cap of the grapes down with stakes.
Yes. So we started to buy our barrels from a very good tonnellerie in Austria, which is named Stockinger, Franz Stockinger, and it's located in the southern part of Austria. The oak comes from the forest there, and it's very similar quality as the Slavonian one. Nowadays, it's a little bit more difficult than in the past to find good Slavonian oak. So that's why we wanted to try and to see the most similar quality. And we chose Stockinger because it works very seriously. And so every year we are gradually replacing our old barrels, and we are buying like 3-4 new barrels from Austria, different sizes, because it really produces the barrels, makes the barrels for our necessities, for our vineyard size, because for us it's one vineyard, one barrel. So really we need the size according to the vineyard necessity. And we are very happy with our barrels. A very good quality of oak. This is a very neutral, very severe, austere kind of oak, so does not influence with an aggressive aromatics the Nebbiolo or the Barbera. So we are very happy right now. About the submerged cap, this is an experiment, but probably the word experiment is not the correct one, because this is what it's traditional in the Lange Hills, and so this is what my grandfather and his father, they used to do in the past. It's a typical way of maceration, which is very extremely soft and delicate, so you don't break the cap, you don't move, but with pumping over, but you just put some wooden pieces on top of the barrel, so that they have a pressure, and the skin, they stay on the top, and you just leave the tank like this for a very long period. So after the 25th day of regular alcoholic fermentation maceration, we put these wooden pieces, and the total period of maceration is 62 days with natural temperature. So it's just very slow, long, but much more delicate and softer. And we tried to use this technique again for the first vintage in 2009. We wanted to try with Brico Chiesa Vineyard, which is the closest one. And so one barrel was done this way, and the other one was in the regular way. And by regular way, I mean it's 30-day maceration with regular pumping over. And then we tasted the wines, and for the first year we were not so happy with the old technique, Cappello Sommerso, because less fruit, it was very close, very tight. And this vineyard we use to produce our Classico Barolo, which is generally the most approachable one. So we didn't believe this was the right way. So that's why in 2010 we decided not to repeat. But what happened is that after 2 years, so in 2011, of course, we taste the wine very frequently. We completely changed our mind, because the wine from that barrel was so rich, so intense, so deep, good structure. But then the aromatics, they developed after some time. And so we nowadays we are doing these every year for the Barolo Classico only, not on all the vineyards.
And you also started to age some of the wines longer before release.
Yes, yes, and this is another big investment for us, because we have many vineyards, many single vineyard selection, and you really need more space to keep all the bottles for a longer period before release on the market. So what we decided is to have a 10 years reserva for our Vigna Rionda. Vigna Rionda has always been a 5 years reserva for us, but starting with 2006 vintage, the wine will be released after 10 years, so 1st January 2017. This is a big decision nowadays, especially with the economic period, because we have to keep the bottles, we don't have the money for the wine, but Vigna Rionda really needs time, and so it is worth waiting. The Barolo from Vigna Rionda is one of the most important in terms of tannin contents and so aging potentials. And Vigna Rionda, when it's young, the nose is really very not expressive. It's really tight and close. And we don't want to put on the market and to offer to our customers a wine which cannot be appreciated and understood. Because Vigna Rionda is probably one of the best Barolos. And we want the people to understand this. So that's why we prefer to keep the wine for a longer period. And after 10 years, the wine is ready. Is ready to to be appreciated. Of course, can age longer, but...
And you're doing something similar with Brunate?
Brunate and Bussia, both, we judge every vintage according to the vintage characteristics, and they can be 5 years reserva or released after 4 years. Depends on the vintage. It's not a marketing thing, but really we taste the wines and we decide. For example, 2006 vintage of Brunate and Bussia is just available now. So we just started to sell this vintage for these two vineyards right now in 2013, while 2007 vintage was released last year, you know.
And what has been the reception that you've found over the years to Barolo in different markets of the world?
Okay. When I started to work full-time for the winery, I'm talking about 7 years ago, I immediately started to come to the U.S. 3-4 times a year. My aunt, she said, you have to go, you have to learn to meet the people and learn traveling and meet the customers. And I can say that United States is really the most important market right now for our wines, because not only there is interest for this wine, but there is also professional attitude to the wines. So all the people in the wine business that I meet, they really want to know all the small details. They really care about the differences of the terroir. They really want to learn, and they want to be good ambassadors of our wines to the customers, and so that more people get to know Barolo and Barbaresco. And so this is market where we work very, very well, because you can have this synergy also with the people in the restaurants, the wine importers or the journalists, and this is very, very important in my opinion. Of course, Europe is a historical market for us, especially Switzerland, Germany, and Austria. Even if nowadays the things have changed a little bit, and so the sales are much slower than in the past. We sell very well in the UK and the northern part of Europe, so Scandinavian countries. We just started in China, little by little.
What's that experience like?
Oh, I enjoyed a lot to visit there. For me, it was very, very interesting to discover a completely different culture than ours. And I was then there 3 times. I think this is a very important moment to be there. So it's important for producers like us to go there and explain our richness and our territory to them. Today, the consumption of Piedmontese wine is not big at all. So it's a very little niche. And also the volumes we sell are very, very small. But it's good to go there now, to invest there now, and thinking about the future, because China will surely be a very important market in the future years. Japan is a historical market. They know very well good quality wines from all over the world, so has always been a historical market for Barolo. And Australia, too, is starting to buy. So.
Oh, I didn't know that. Is that true?
Yes, yes. I've never been there. I wish I could go, but...
It's a long flight. and I've seen, in terms of the bottles that make it to this country, some changes on the label in terms of how the same vineyard is represented, you know, with the Mandoca. Sometimes it's been Bussia Soprana di Mandoca. It's been... So what is behind that, those changes? And are there regulations that have changed surrounding vineyard use?
Yes, now there is the new regulation, which was officially fixed, I think, 2009-2010 by the Consorzio di Tutela Barolo e Barbaresco, so for the crews. Finally, all the crews, they were limited and officially put on the map and registered on the law. And so there are 181 crews for Barolo. And so the regulation on the labeling processes have been stricter, which means that now you have to write the denomination first and then the name of the vineyard, the menzione geografica. And for example, Bussia Soprana will change again because it will not be no more named Soprana or Sottana, but just Bussia, because Bussia is the name of the vineyard. It's the name of the crew. And so on our Barolo, no more Mondoca, no more Soprana. It will be only Bussia.
But it's the exact same vineyard. It's just that naming is strange.
Exactly. We didn't change. It's the same vineyard, but just more. It's a different way of labeling, but just because I think the intention, the objective is to have things clearer for the consumer. To understand all the different vineyards. And also, they decided to fix precisely the limit of the crews. So it's good that everybody respects these, in my opinion. Then there are, of course, some particular things that are a bit more complicated. Mm.
So, for instance, people were calling vineyards, like you call Brico Fiasco and Castiglione Folletto. Mm-hmm. Other people call that Brico Fiasco. In the past, but that's the same vineyard.
Same vineyard, yes. Brico del Fiasco is just Piedmontese dialect. It's the way to say Brico del Fiasco in our dialect, but nowadays will be Brico Fiasco.
So every producer of Barolo from that vineyard is going to call it the same thing going forward.
Yes, I think so, even because they are making severe controls in our area to check. These. Last 2 weeks ago, I heard that a producer has been controlled.
Oh, really?
Has been controlled. The police, they look at the website. They go on the website, they see the labels on the website are not correct, so they come to the winery and they check all the labels.
Wow.
Of course, these regulations started with 2010 vintage for Barolo, while started with 2008 vintage for Barbaresco. So
I see.
Before... They cannot control. Yeah.
So if I looked at a vertical of Mondoca from Odero, the label has changed a few times, or will change a few times.
Yes, yes, yes.
But at the same time, what about blending different vineyards together in terms of how you can label that? Is that affected at all?
Yeah, this is a problem because you cannot put the different names of the crews on the main label. So Barolo Classico, will only be Barolo DOCG with no indication of the vineyards because this is not a single vineyard selection. So you are allowed to write the name of the vineyard only if it's 100% grapes from this specific vineyard. And this can be a problem, especially for producers. Like I know my good friend Marta Rinaldi at this. I think she has this kind of problem because what is tradition for her family is always to blend the two vineyards and to name the wine after these two vineyards. We always called the Barolo Classico just Barolo, so we don't have a big change in the labeling.
Because that's a wine that includes wine from several different vineyards.
Yes, it includes grapes from Brico Chiesa and Capalotto from La Morra and Brico Fiasco from Castiglione Falletto.
So if you wanted to, you wouldn't be able to indicate that on the front label in the future?
I will not be able, so maybe I can use a back label, but I'm not sure.
It's still a little hazy.
Yeah, yeah.
And do you buy in any grapes at Odero, or is it all owned vineyards?
It's all owned vineyards. We do not buy grapes, so everything is produced with our own estate grapes. And I am proud to say this because it's very important to have the personal control on your own vineyard. So really for us, 99% of our work, of our efforts are done in the vineyard operations.
And was at one point there a split between Giacomo and Luigi in terms of the vineyard holdings?
Yes. So my grandfather and his brother Luigi, they've been working together all their lives. But at the end of the cooperation, there were some difficulties in the everyday work, just caused by different objectives. Future goals were different. And so it's not anymore so practical to work in this way. So we decided to separate the company, to split. And we kept the main crews, I mean the historical vineyards. We maintained the historical winery, the historical Oddero brand, Oddero label is our property, as well as the all the historical crews. So Rocche di Castiglione, Villero, Brunate, Bussia, they are our property. The only vineyard that they also have is Vigna Rionda in Serra Lunga. So we own Vigna Rionda and they also have a parcel of Vigna Rionda. This is the only vineyard that is still property of both of the two wineries. But if you think of all the other crews, the important vineyards, they are our property. And this is only because we really had a different objective, a different philosophy, and they chose their own pattern. It happens, unfortunately, even in the best families.
So there are two different Oderos for Rionda in terms of bottling.
Yes, yes. But I don't think they have the Riserva Rionda. I think they release the Barolo after four years. Yes. And of course, it's a very small production for both of us because Vigna Rionda is 2,500 bottles per year.
And going forward, what's going to be some of the new things or objectives that you're moving towards? I mean, I remember at one point Maria Cristina saying that they were trying for UNESCO World Heritage status on Brunate. Are there other things that are sort of in the works that you're moving toward?
Yes. Well, as I said before, first of all, the organic cultivation, so to extend organic cultivation to all our vineyards, so the 35 hectares, so not only concerning the Nebbiolo, but all our varieties. This is our future objective, and for sure it will require many years, a lot of time, because we need to know the best way to manage it. Then Cristina is personally involved in the UNESCO, which heritage, World Heritage, so they are still judging if the Lange Hills can be included in the UNESCO heritage, and at the first time they wanted to exclude the La Morra area and Santa Maria, and so Cristina was very passionate about, you know, promoting the La Morra area, and she, together with other people from Santa Maria, they wrote some documents and to demonstrate that this is an area which is very good to be included in the UNESCO. I think important objective for my family is also to improve the communication. Because, and I am now responsible for this, I am now in charge of this project, because my family has always been, my grandfather and his brother, they are very good farmers. They've always been concentrating their efforts in the vineyards. They didn't travel so much in the past years. They didn't go and be ambassadors of their name around the world. And so I think this is one thing we need to do, and I need to do now. And so I am responsible now for bringing our objectives and our principles around the world. And so to offer a good service to the customer, which means very, very easy and simple information in an easy way.
And what's your own connection to wine? I mean, are there wines that have been particularly meaningful to you? If I were to say to you, what was a time that you really enjoyed with a glass of wine? What might come to mind?
Well, my story with wine is a little bit different than the one of my friends. My age, they are winemakers in the Barolo area, because I didn't go to enological school and I didn't study winemaking at university, but I chose a different pattern at first. So I studied classic literatures and then economics at university. And only after I decided, and it was really a spontaneous choice, to go back to my roots and to go back to wine and to work with Cristina and with our family estate. So it was a really conscious choice. And I started to, as everybody in the Lange, to enjoy the typical wines of the region. So I used to drink Moscato when I was 7 years old, because my grandmother used to give a little glass of Moscato in the afternoon while having the merenda, we call, which is a little snack in the afternoon. And then, of course, Barbera and Nebbiolo, and I am in love with Nebbiolo. I think there is no comparison with the elegance that Nebbiolo can offer. And so sometimes for me it's difficult, you know, to really appreciate wines that are very different than ours. I don't know if I can explain well this. My palate is very used to our own wines. It's very classic. But I enjoy tasting wines from different regions, and especially for the white wines. I love the white from the Sauvignon Blanc, from Friuli, the typical wines from Friuli, and also the Riesling and Kerner from Alto Adige. I love, of course, Pinot Noir, well, Burgundy Pinot Noir, if I have the chance. I enjoy a lot. And I love to taste the Nebbiolo from northern part of Piemonte and Valtellina. And I also tasted recently some interesting Nebbiolos from, you know, the Oregon area. Very different expressions, but interesting.
So if I can ask, how old are you these days?
I am 20, almost 29 years old.
And do you see generational change in the Piemonte?
Yes, yes. And this is something I am very excited about and very proud of, because I think in the Lange there are many, many good people, new generation, that are personally involved in taking care of their family wineries. And this was not an obliged choice like in the past, because nowadays we are in the 2000 years, so we have so many opportunities. And if somebody wants to study medicine and become a doctor, or study law and become a lawyer, it's possible. They just can follow their own passion. So the people that now are involved in the family cellars in the Lange, it was really their choice to be there. And they all are young, like me, both boys and girls. So it's also a nice thing to see many, many girls, many women involved, both in the winemaking processes, both in the traveling and in the communication and in the sale. And this is not typically a women environment, especially in Italy. This is a very man-dominated world. But nowadays things have changed, and so many girls are personally involved in this. And for example, next week in the Lange Hills in Alba, there is Nebbiolo Prima event, and we are organizing a small group of young wine producers, a nice tasting to the people, to the journalists. And it's me, Marta Rinaldi from Rinaldi, it's Claudio Viberti from Giovanni Viberti, Pietro Colla from Colla, and Eleonora Barale from Barale Fratelli in Barolo.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And we are having a tasting together, and like a discussion about our own experiences with winemaking, with our work, our future objectives. And I think this is important to communicate to the people that we are there, and we are passionate, and we work in a professional way. And more than in the past, we have very good relationship with each other. So we are not competitors, but we also share many similar objectives and principles, and we work together well. And so we are having a nice tasting. We both show one old vintages made by our parents and one new current release, which is more our vintage. So I'm very excited about this.
Well, I wish you continued success on your wine journey. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Levi. Thank you for the opportunity. Grazie.
Isabella Odero of the Poderi Odero Winery in Santa Maria in Lamora. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Hey, gang. So you know our show here is sponsored by the Wonderful 750, which is a search and find pricing database for wholesale buyers in New York and New Jersey, which we love very much. But we found a few other people who love it, too, one of whom is the fabulous Kristen Murphy of the Wine Library, who's here today.
Hey, guys. So I buy for a lot of different random wines, and I love to use 750 because there's a lot of great smaller wholesalers on there that you can take a look at. And as Garth Algar would say from Wayne's World, live in the now. Use 750 because it's great. And it's wonderful for those liquor buyers and wine buyers out there.
Kristen Murphy of the Wine Library, a user of the 750 service. Thank you. I'll Drink to That is released twice weekly and available for you to find on iTunes, on Stitcher, and on our own dedicated website called alldrinktothatpod.com, no apostrophe. I'm Levy Dalton. Thank you for listening.